Hi, this is Kim West, the Sleep Lady, and we're here today with Dr. Renee Hackney. Thank you so much, Dr. Renee, for joining us.
Thank you.
I wanted to tell you all a little bit about Dr. Renee. She wears many hats, most notably as wife to husband Troy and mom to beautiful daughters Allison, 11, and Claire, 8. She is also Miss Renee to preschoolers and Dr. Renee to parents. She's earned her MA in school psychology and her PhD in developmental psychology. She is also the founder and creator of Parenting Playgroups, where parents learn and children play. In 2004, Renee created Parenting Playgroups, highly successful workshops for parents and programs for children's ages 1 to 10 years old. Renee's practical and balanced approach helps moms and dads learn about options and best practices that lead to happy, healthy children. Renee is also a much called upon expert who teaches and trains educators and social service providers in the areas of child development. A trusted friend, confidant, and colleague, Renee shows her commitment each and every day to the many families enrolled in Parenting Playgroups programs. So that's great. Thank you again for joining us, Dr. Renee.
Thank you for having me.
So can you please take a couple minutes to explain to our listeners about Parenting Playgroups, children's programs, and where you're located, and a little bit about what you have to offer parents?
Sure. Parenting Playgroups is my office. We have one facility in Alexandria, Virginia, and another in Falls Church, Virginia. Each has one preschool classroom, and in each classroom, we see lots of children every week. There's just regular preschool. Children can enroll 1, 2, or 3 mornings a week. It's a 2-hour drop-off program. There's another morning program called Play and Workshop, where the parents have a half hour of play with their children and then sit for an hour for a weekly workshop topic while the children have snack and activities with our preschool teachers. So those parents are getting an hour of our workshops every week during the course of the school year. We also have a play class for the really little ones, the 1 to 2.5-year-olds, called Beginner's Play, and that's a 1-hour play class with their parents. So our facilities, as much as it's just two preschool classrooms, we saw about 180 kids a week last year. So very kind of busy little bodies in and out.
Yeah.
We also, for the older children, have a program called Social Skills Groups. The Social Skills Groups, during the school year, they meet for 1 hour a week for 16 weeks. And it's a play-based program. It's for children 3 through 9 years old who struggle still a bit with social skills. Mm-hmm. In the social skills groups, each week there's a weekly topic, something like recognizing emotions in others, or joining into ongoing play, or managing competition. And during the class time, the children are participating in art projects and sing-alongs and story times and movement games and puppet shows and role plays, but it's all designed to teach about whatever the topic is that week. So it's a very interactive class. The kids are really having fun, but we're working them. They're learning some real valuable skills for social exchange.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about the social skills and these groups and help us learn, you know, what that means. And most of all, how does one know if their child would benefit from this?
Yeah, what we tend to talk to parents about is looking at the child's just their play skills and their interactive skills. Social competence as children is really defined as their ability to play while keeping friends. So if you've got a child at 3 years old or at 8 years old, when they play, if the kids around them still like them, they want them to be on their team, that's a pretty socially competent child. Where it starts to be a flag is when the child plays, they either don't know how to get in with the kids, the other kids reject them, the other kids get annoyed by them after a while. That idea is there's likely something, if that happens repeatedly, there's likely something going on with that child's social skills, with that child's ability to play. And so you're looking at, on their own, have they kind of developed, or with you, have they developed through their opportunities, skills to be able to manage play and social. Our classes, we definitely do get some children who have diagnosed conditions, things like attention deficits or autistic spectrum, but we also get lots of children. More than half of our classes are just children who are struggling a bit with play or struggling because their parents, you know, have identified that they're really shy, they pull back, or they don't know how to get into groups, or they don't know how to manage when other kids are being mean. So we've definitely got a broad range of children who come to take class.
So maybe it would be worth, even though you've briefly said some of the pieces of social skills, but maybe you could define what that is, because it's clearly more than manners, so to speak.
Definitely more than manners. Mm-hmm. We start off with the foundation of teaching children about emotion language, being able to identify emotions correctly, because emotions and social, those are two very intertwined pieces. If a child has emotional difficulties or a misunderstanding of emotions, likely they're going to have social difficulty. Children who have social difficulty, emotions is one of the first places you can look to see, are they reading it right? Are they interacting in appropriate ways with emotions? So we spend several weeks just that, recognizing emotions in others, managing your own emotions, expressing and displaying emotions. Then we get into the more basic things, turn-taking, sharing, cooperation, caring conversation, the friendship skills, things like honesty and respect for others, and personal space issues are a piece of that. Mm-hmm. We also spend a day on what's called social entry, and that's the child's ability to get into ongoing play, where they come into the room and there's four other kids in the house and they want to be in there. Most four-year-olds can kind of seamlessly do that, but there are some children who can't, so that's one of those pieces. As children are getting a little older, we talk about managing competition, managing when other children are mean or being bullies, and how to socially problem solve and conflict resolution. So there's definitely a lot of skills in there.
And what's the age range are we talking here?
We start our social skills groups as early as 3 years old. At 3 years old, we are doing very basic skills, and it really is play-based. As the children get a little older, our groups go up through 9 years old. There are definitely groups, though, in the area that are through adolescence. There are social skills groups for teenagers. They're just doing very different things in those classes. In our groups, so we group ours 3 to 5 years old and 6 to 8.5 years old. And in those older classes, we do a little bit of writing and a little bit of journaling. Not a lot, but it's enough to kind of build that piece in to get kids thinking about it in kind of yet another way.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So why don't you share with us a little bit about that? You know, how do you teach children social skills?
Sure. There are lots of ways to teach social skills, but it's best to keep in mind you want the children to enjoy the process. So it's likely best done through play or through experiences that are things that they would like to do. One of the first things when we're talking to parents about teaching their children social skills is to avoid lecture. If you're lecturing for more than a couple sentences, especially about social, most of those children have tuned you out. So if you are finding yourself just talking through something, you want to be sure you're making it at least interactive, that you're asking them their opinion or what they think about it or how it could have gone better in their mind, so they're at least engaged in that. But all the better if you can avoid the lecture. Things like reading stories about, for competition, stories like Quitters Never Win. It's a book by Mia Hamm, the Olympic soccer player. And in the story, she talks about how when she was growing up, she really wanted to play soccer with her older siblings, but she wasn't as good. And so every day she would get fed up and quit. Well, after a few days of that, they wouldn't let her play anymore. And she realized from her siblings that if I want to play, I'm going to have to be able to manage losing. And it's stories like that where you can take the book, read the book, but then have discussion about or then have movement game about, some follow-up that kind of fills in that that idea. So reading about it. Telling your own stories about. If parents can get creative, they can tell their own stories to teach social skills. In our house, my daughters are Allison and Claire, and when they were little, we would tell a lot of Amy and Katie stories. We created these two little characters, and Amy was remarkably like Allison, and Katie was remarkably like Claire. So if in the morning they had some big upset at the sandbox at the playground, that night the story was about Amy and Katie having a remarkably similar experience at the swing set. But mm-hmm. in the storytelling, you have all good outcome and good problem solving. So you're modeling how it could have gone better, but through a story.
Mm.
It took a couple years before Allison said, "Hey, I'm Amy." So we had to say, yeah. Puppet shows are a good way. Role play is a good way. Let's say that big upset in the sandbox. When you get home later that day, you might say, "Hey, let's go through that again, but I'll be you, and you be the other kid. Or you be you again, and I'll be your sister." Role-playing it and trying to brainstorm better ways with children so they're getting some actual practice at. If children are hesitant to do the role-play, just give them a puppet show about it or use the doll babies to show them.
Mm-hmm. And not necessarily say you're doing that.
Right. You just play with it.
Mm-hmm.
Art projects about things like sharing or cooperative effort. We do cooperative drawings at our office where we'll get out the poster board, and for four children we'll say, "Okay, now this is a poster board, and you're all going to have to work on it together. You're going to be drawing a playground. Before you start, you really need to talk to each other about what you want to include and who's going to draw what and where you're going to draw it and what each of you wants it to look like." So they're learning how to socially problem solve, but they're having fun because they're drawing a playground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's thinking about getting creative that way. Getting them up and moving. We play games like Simon Says Please for teaching manners, where it's not just Simon Says, but if the please happens, you do it, and if the please doesn't happen, you don't. So it's little twists on games like that where you're building in the manners. Asking children hypotheticals. This is really as they get to be about 4 or 5 years old. But hypotheticals, it's like a quiz game. It's the what-if game. My younger daughter, when she was about 5 years old, she lied a lot. She would just assume, tell you the sky was green and then look at you to see what you were going to say.
Mm-hmm.
So our hypotheticals with
her. Isn't that a common thing to happen at that age?
It's really common. It's really common for them to just test out the language, and it's about creative use of language. But we got a little worried because it was often. So our hypotheticals with her were things like, "What would you do if you and your friend were the last two in the classroom and your friend wanted to take candy off the teacher's desk?" It's a little hypothetical about honesty, and nobody's in trouble. Nobody's really taking candy, you know? So if they choose the wrong thing, you just walk down that path. You say, "Well, what would happen if the teacher walked in?" Or, "What would happen if she wouldn't let anybody go for recess the next day?" Or, "Your friend told on you." So you go back and you walk them down a better path. But it's just getting them to think through, what are my options in these situations? There's a couple of really good books that have activity ideas for teaching social skills, like game ideas. They're by a woman named Deborah Plummer. She has a book called Social Skills Games for Children, another called Anger Management Games for Children, and Self-Esteem Games for Children. So they're very play-based, but lots of ideas by age for games and interactive.
And Plummer, can you spell that, please?
Plummer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Another little tip, when we talked earlier about just avoiding lecture, as much as I tell parents, avoid lecture, I say it every day, I know they're still lecturing. With little boys, they say if you're going to go on like that, you want to be shoulder to shoulder with your hands busy doing shared activity, meaning sit down beside them and build Legos and then have the conversation, or sit down beside them in color and then have the conversation. Little girls tend to do far better with their bodies still in direct eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
Little boys tend to be more open if you're going to be talking to them about more heavy things or more in a lecture type way.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
They also say, I've heard that if they're doing something else, like you could also be talking to them and be throwing a ball back and forth.
Definitely. Shared activity is a nice way to go, particularly with boys. Sometimes you'll get little girls and you try to do that and they're like, "Why aren't you listening to me?"
Uh-huh.
They want you to look. They want you to be attention. They want you to be still.
And you see the difference like that with men and women.
Oh, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. That's a good. So avoid lecture.
Mm-hmm.
And what about, so you talked about some of the foundation skills.
Yeah. Foundation skills are things like emotion language. Emotion language is just baseline for children being able to get along socially. And it really isn't till about 2.5 or 3 where children start to be a little more flexible with emotion language, being able to identify and label. But somewhere at 3 to 5 years old, you really want to be getting that emotion language in there. Now, two of the easiest ways, I think, are covered in positive discipline. It's the I messages, where parents are saying, I'm upset, no one is listening, or I'm frustrated, this is a mess, or giving them empathy, wow, you're angry, you didn't like that game. You're labeling emotions in the parent-child relationship. But I think parents should go farther. Talk about emotions of other people. When you're out at the grocery store and you hear the crying baby, it's good to say to child, wow, do you hear that sad baby? The baby is crying. What do you think they can do to help the baby? It's getting them to think about emotions when they're not in it. We had a really great music teacher at the preschool I used to teach at, and the kids would come down for music class, and there would be sad music, and they would talk about sad things, and they'd draw sad pictures, and it's this real slow day at music. But they're learning about sadness when they're not in it, when they're not overwhelmed by it, so they can actually kind of reflect on it. It's also doing all the things that we just talked about with teaching social skills. It's reading books about emotions, like Today I Feel Silly, or My Many Colored Days, or When Sophie Gets Really, Really Mad. There's a good 20 books about teaching emotions, and storybooks for children, or telling your own stories about emotions, or role-playing or puppet shows about emotions, or movement games like Play Emotion Charades, where the child is acting out emotions. All of those are nice ways to go. You want to make it more fun. But that emotion language really is a foundation skill. Very early on, place space also becomes an issue, somewhere by about 3.5 years old. There are a lot of children who just don't understand personal space or boundary issues. As 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds, they lay all over each other. But by 4 and 5, especially by 5, children who have those boundary issues, children who talk really close or who lounge on their friends or who, by 5 years old, they start to annoy their friends. And so it's thinking about teaching them those boundary issues. There's a good children's book called Personal Space Camp. It's by Julia Cook. Personal Space Camp is about a story of a little boy who just doesn't get boundary issues, and the teacher teaches him throughout. And then there's some ideas at the back of the book for parents about how to teach space issues. Julia Cook has actually written several social skills children's books that way, where there's a story, and then there's some ideas for the parents.
I like that.
Yeah. We do interactive games to teach personal space. Like, we have 6 children stand in 6 touching hula hoops. So the hula hoops are on the ground, and they stand in the middle of them, and they have a conversation. So the kids are about 1 foot apart from each other. And then we squish all 6 kids into 1 hula hoop and ask them to have the same conversation. And it's a lot harder, and it's funny, but it's teaching them about how much distance. And we have them hold their hands kind of locked. One child hold their own hands in a circle in front of them, like a bubble, like they're holding a ball. And we say, that's your personal space bubble. And if you bump into other people with it, that means your bubble pops. And so they walk around and they bump into each other, and they think it's funny to bump, you know, pop their bubbles. But we're trying to give them a visual of what that is. And it's knowing that by about 5 years old, it becomes an unpopular thing to still have kind of boundary issues.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I've absolutely seen that with some children.
Yeah. Another foundation is just turn-taking, and I tend to think of turn-taking with 2- and 3-year-olds, that you want to be teaching turn-taking. Sharing is a bit more ambiguous. We might all touch it at the same time, and that's more like a 3.5-4-year-old skill. But if you've got a 3-year-old who's not good at turn-taking, I think once a day as a parent, you just walk them through that process. Let's say a child is playing at the train table, and they're playing by themselves. They're happy. You can go over to that 3-year-old and say, oh, wow, you're playing trains. I'm going to take a turn with this green train. This is the best train on the table. And you start to play with it. And if they want a turn, you say, oh, honey, you want a turn? I'll be done in just a minute. And then you feel really silly, but you play with the green train for a minute or two. And then you say, oh, here you go. You were waiting for a turn. I'm going to put it in your hand. And when you're done, remember that I want it back. Can you remember and give me a turn and put it in my hand? And then they play with it. And if they remember to give it back, you gush. You say, oh, my goodness, look at you. You gave a turn. If they don't remember, you can always stop and say, wow, I was really waiting for that. Can you hand it to me? And then they do, and then you gush a little because they followed up. But that idea is, if you do that once a day with a 3-year-old, every day without in a threatening way. It's not like they're in a tug of war over something already, but they're learning about turn taking. So it's just, it's kind of role playing it with them. Social entry is also seen as foundation, and social entry by about 4 or 5 years old is child's ability to get into ongoing play. So let's say you walk into a preschool classroom with your child and there are 4 other kids playing over in the house and your child really wants to play in that house. Social entry is, do they get in there in a smooth way? Do they know how to enter that ongoing group? And lots of children just do on their own. There's 2 kind of poor ways. There's the child who hangs back and watches and waits to be invited in, really wants to be in there but doesn't make that effort. I think for some of those children, it's just proximity. It's just saying, oh, honey, just go pick up a doll baby. Once you're playing in there, now there's 5 kids playing in there. Thinking about at the playground, if there's 10 kids playing tag and your child goes in and runs around in there, now there's 11 kids playing tag. And they really didn't need to say much. But it could also be getting them to speak up. Unfortunately, what most parents tend to tell children to do, they say, go ask them, can I play? 9 times out of 10, the other children are going to say no. Can I play backfires because there's power in saying no to that. And so you want to shift the sentence. You want to teach your kids to be more specific. Hey, go ask them, how can I play? Or what can I be? Or how can I help? How can I play? What can I be? How can I help? They're going to much more often be met with success because the other child gets to tell you what you can do. The other child gets to say, oh, you can be the dog. Oh, you can be the sister. Just because there's more power in saying yes there, it's more likely the child gets into the play.
Mm-hmm.
It may also be teaching the child just to offer to help. Hey, can I help? Offering to help often is met with success. Or, as manipulative as this is, teach them to compliment the other children. Hey, go say something nice to them. Go tell them you like their house. It's a cocktail party skill. When you get to the cocktail party and say, I love your dress, that person is now your friend, you know, so it works.
I was thinking about even, you know, sort of small things in terms of when your friend Lee, when they come over and you have a play time at your house. I remember doing this with my kids when they were little, and that you asked your friend, you know, will you help me put the toys away before you go?
Yeah.
And then you walk them to the door and you say goodbye, thanks for coming. You know, those little, you know, small things. Because I remember I would always, you know, the house, the playroom would be a mess. And then I'd say to the girls, you know, we have to clean up. And they'd say, well, that's not fair. You know, say, well, then maybe next time we have to ask our friends to help us put things away before they leave.
Yeah. It's all those skills. It's all those, you know, planning for and walking them through and helping them practice.
So, you know, turn taking is, and sharing is an interesting thing, not just, of course, with little kids, but older ones. You know, you sort of see that, like I've seen this with boys and playing video games, that it's really easy for one person in the group to kind of take over.
Yeah,
and get into that. No, we're doing it my way, or it's my machine, it's my house, or I'm better at it, and that becomes a problem.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah. And I think, you know, for a lot of parents, we tend to think, oh well, they're older, they'll work it out, or oh well, they're older, you know, that's what kids do. I tend to think when it's going poorly, you at least check in with the other kid and say, hey, is that okay with you? You know, to let them know they have a voice if they're getting the short end of the stick. I think you can also just come in and say, this doesn't seem like it's going well. We need to, you all, if they're old enough, need to come up with some guidelines. You know, have them make decisions about 20-minute turns or about who's going to go first or about, you know, so that they're coming back to a more even place.
Yeah.
In our house, we do a lot of, you can divide the ice cream and scoop it, the other gets to pick. Or some families do odd days, even days, where if it's an odd day, you make all the decisions. If it's an even day, other child makes all the decisions. Do you know something to kind of make it a more regular process?
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Have you, I mean, I don't know if this necessarily goes under the sharing, turn-taking, maybe emotional language, but I see a lot, and not just, I mean, in teenagers you see this a lot, but also the younger kids, this constant, you know, I know.
Yeah.
you know, as a response. Well, you'll say, it could be the simplest thing, like, can you please turn, you know, the light off before you come upstairs? I know. When, you know, clearly if they knew, you wouldn't be asking, you know, you kind of get into that thing. Do you have any good tips on that?
Yeah. One, I mean, it's your tolerance, a parent's tolerance level for, because there are some parents when the child does that, they think that's just incredibly fresh or disrespectful. And there are other parents who go, that's just part of communication, you know, and we need to find a better way. But I think you might try to come up with just, I know this takes a little effort on the parent part, but more novel ways to remind them. Like if they don't turn off the light, you stand there and flip the light up and down and up and down until they come down, do you know? Or you have a sign that they've forgotten to do something, like a high five or a, you know, a symbol, something that they've forgotten to do something. You might, if they're really forgetting to do things like that all the time, come up with checklist for child. Granted, I would still have the child managing the checklist because, you know, we're describing a little bit older children, but something that can remind them so it's not just you, so it doesn't feel like it's you nagging them to do things.
Having them have a checklist so that when, whatever, before they go up to bed, they've looked at their little list that they do, whatever, get their school bag together, put their shoes in the mudroom, whatever the list is.
Whatever that list is. And so they can just check it off themselves. We have that, just that little piece of homework and bags in our house. Homework is not finished till your bag is packed and it's by the door. So it's kind of not moving on to the next thing, because we've had far too many mornings of everybody scrambling in the morning and missing papers and so you get a little proactive and you get a little more organized about it.
Good. What else? Can we go over all the foundations?
Those are foundations. With our older children, because we do go through about 9 years old, we do spend weeks on managing competition or what to do if there's a bully in the classroom. And we go over some of those kind of more interactive ideas. Things like competition, we definitely still read the books and do the role plays. There's a Berenstain Bears Good Sport book. There's the Quitters Never Win by Mia Hamm. There's a book called The Mightiest, which is about forest animals that find a crown and they all think they're the mightiest, so it's competition. We also tend to say start really small. With competition with children, you don't want to start with soccer. You want to start with rock, paper, scissors. You know, start with something that takes a few seconds to win or lose. And then gradually work your way up to board games and then to sports. Mm-hmm. And I think the whole time, even rock, paper, scissors and little board games, you're talking to children about what it means to be a gracious winner, what it means to be a good sport loser, what you can say when you win, what you can say to other people when you lose, you know, working toward teamwork and working toward being a good sport and sportsmanship. And I think you do yourself a big favor by building that in when they're first learning, you know, games like Hi Ho Cheerio, little small games, and modeling to them. And what I think unfortunately happens for parents whose children really struggle with competition and they're poor sports is the parents tend to pull them out of the sports. They tend to pull them out of the games. Well, if you're going to be like that, we're just not going to play. Those children actually need more practice. You know, they need more coaching and more practice because you don't want child still reacting that way at, you know, 17. And so it's thinking about really going back to the drawing board and focusing on the steps to get there.
Yeah, I like that. That's definitely very important. So, you know, common one that probably most parents have heard about is this discussion of, you know, when you're playing a board game with your child and whether you should beat them or whether you should always let them win.
Yeah, I don't think you always let them win. I get you don't want to beat them every time. If you beat them every time, because of course you're better at some of these strategy games than they are, even things like tic-tac-toe, they just randomly put their numbers on or their X's and O's. You don't want to do either. If you just let them win all the time, they're much more likely to be devastated when they lose. And if you beat them all the time, they just don't want to play. And so I think there's a balance in there. And when you're playing just a simple game like tic-tac-toe. It can be very helpful in the process, not every time, but if some of the times you let them know your strategy, you tell them what you're thinking as you play, you're telling them why you're putting something where you're putting it, so that they're actually learning how to play the game better, not just playing and randomly winning or losing.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
So that they can experience both.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And actually be building strategy and understanding how games work.
Mm-hmm.
We're a big game family.
Yeah. And so this is what you were saying on how parents can introduce and teach their children about competition. Just
Definitely.
The small steps. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, and the games. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an important life lesson.
Definitely.
To learn. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. There are also, just in general, some good books for parents about social skills. There is a book titled Raise Your Child's Social IQ. Raise Your Child's Social IQ by Cohen, C-O-H-E-N. Raise Your Child's Social IQ is an activity book for parents to work through with children. It's basically kind of like teaching social skills at home. And it goes over several of the different categories. There's a chapter on managing anger. There's a chapter on competition. And it gives a lot of good ideas for parents to be doing at home. There's also some good just parent books in general around the topic. There's a book called The Friendship Factor
mm-hmm.
by Rubin. And that really is just all about current research on children's friendships and how children make friends and the importance of friendships and what to do when friendships aren't going well.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Playground Politics by Greenspan. Playground Politics is about social and emotional development through elementary and middle school, and it lays out lots of ideas for parents about what's important socially and the skills children should have through those elementary and middle school years.
Mhm. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Not that, you know, parents have a lot of time to read
right.
all of these books, but maybe
right.
they sound like they'd be great to, you could probably get on your Kindle or book on tape.
Oh,
or so you could listen to it when you're running or driving to work or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's helpful.
Also, as much as we offer social skills groups here and we'd love to have mm-hmm. everyone, we know there are also social skills available in across the country in most areas. A place to ask would be a pediatrician.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully the pediatricians would know, or the guidance counselors at school. Guidance counselors might be able to steer parents toward. There's also in many public schools, the guidance counselor will run groups similar, like a lunch
mm-hmm.
bunch once a week. So it might be just worth asking there if they have something available as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Excellent. And usually you would know if you don't know it yourself by, you know, seeing your kids play with other children, you would probably be hearing this from their teacher or their
hopefully.
Preschool teacher, right?
Yeah, hopefully. Half the preschool teacher's job is children's social and emotional development and their well-being
mm-hmm.
that way. And so hopefully if there's a concern, that's something they would bring up at parent-teacher conferences. And I think that's a very valid thing for parents to ask about. Do you know,
mm-hmm.
how are they getting along? Are they making friends? Who do they tend mm-hmm. to play with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can have everywhere from the super outgoing child who's has trouble with boundaries and space to a really shy child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you must see quite a mixture in your group.
We do. We definitely see a mixture
mm-hmm.
in our groups.
Mm-hmm.
It's also something to ask if you're going to enroll in social skills groups. We see a mixture, and we take a mixture in every class. There are some facilities where they're looking to make a group of children with attention deficits or children who are more shy and withdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
So just something to ask about.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very, very much. That's
thank
really
you.
Helpful. I know that social skills in general is a huge topic.
Yeah.
But I think that really helped. I know it helped me and hopefully the listeners to differentiate between, you know, manners and social skills and how these are helpful things to model and to teach our children. And some of them are more obvious and others are not and are very subtle.
Yes.
And I think as parents, if we don't know other ways to help them, we may tend to maybe lecture.
Right.
I could see that happening easily. So this is really great. And maybe families, if they feel that this is something they need, they can go to their pediatricians or their guidance counselors to find a group in their area. And, of course, if they're in the D.C., Virginia, Maryland area, they can go to your site. So maybe you can tell everyone sort of how they would find out about groups if they are in your area.
Sure. The groups in our area, you would go to the parentingplaygroups.com website,
mm-hmm.
parentingplaygroups.com, and then from the main page, there's a red social skills groups button, and it lists all of the programs. It has the course syllabus, and there's registration right there online.
Right.
We also do have a list of providers in the D.C., Maryland, and Northern Virginia area. Occasionally ours isn't a good fit for someone or they're too far away, but they're in the Northern Virginia kind of D.C. metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm.
We're happy to share that list. There's about 12 providers in the D.C. area.
And that's would they call for that list?
They could just email and we'll send them the list.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, great. And all that information is on your site.
Thank you
again, Dr. Renee, for your wealth of information.
Yes, thank you for having me.
All right, take care.